The invitation. to everyone for coming out. I don't know when it's coming out, but there's a movie starring Billy Porter, and it's the first movie ever to be shot at Phipps Conservatory. There's some I think the aviary also, there were scenes shot there. And if you squint and look in the background, you'll see me sitting at a table doing my best acting. Anyway, I wanted to read a poem first. As she said, I lived in Pittsburgh for 16 years. Then I moved to Buchanan, West Virginia in August of 2020. And for obvious reasons, I didn't have many interactions with the townspeople, the people outside of the college where I taught. But every interaction that I had with a townsperson basically inspired a poem. Really, the only thing you need to know is, to give you a sense of the neighborhood where I live, they seem to give out an award for the best lawn every season. And it's this plaque that says best lawn in Buchanan, and people sort of stick it in their, in front of their porch with great pride. And it's kind of like the Stanley Cup or something. And I live in a rental house that's slowly returning to nature. And, I don't think I'm going to win any awards anytime soon. But this is a story of something that happened in my nice neighborhood. All right. This is called West Virginia Poem. Can you guys hear me? Upshur County has a tight budget for snow, although the cold's free. It's not working. Oh. You want me to repeat everything that I said before?
Are you sure? Yeah,
just
see as close to the mic if the water fountain rule. Don't put your mouth on it.
West Virginia poem. Upshur County has a tight budget for snow, though the cold's free. By now, everyone's changed tires, and snow fell to the back of our minds months ago. But to the lady down the street, I want to tell her, I like your Christmas lights. They've stayed on, gentle and unblinking, since November, shading the oversized candy canes sentried outside her front door. Don't get me wrong. Her streets lined with trees, budding pink and white, a wonderland of lawn culture and clean vinyl siding. It's a tidy, orderly habitat for the oldest, whitest people in West Virginia. I'm a renter and everyone knows it. This isn't a West Virginia poem yet, not even when a boyfriend shoots the lady inside her house with its pretty Christmas lights. True story. It was still daylight when I walked past the cops, then the stretcher and the ambulance they loaded her into. I didn't catch her face, and the news didn't report it. The neighbors didn't know much, just said it was a family disagreement. This still isn't a West Virginia poem. Moments after the shooting, with the gunshots echoing only in her body, police cruisers parked along the street, blocking traffic. But they were dark and silent. Traffic beyond echoed through the absence of sirens, the absence of red and blue lights spinning. And I wondered what you had to do or be to get lights and sirens. Then the thought faded into the evening dark. I saw the lady weeks later, or at least a silhouette, as she moved toward the television in her living room, backlit and lonesome as a West Virginia poem. The house merry and bright, because she knew when they won't even give you lights, you gotta make your own. This next piece is a Pittsburgh story, even though it's not explicitly set in Pittsburgh. Some of you will understand why and how. It's partly inspired by what happens every year to my sister and brother-in-law during hunting season. I think about Pittsburgh every time a deer runs in front of my car. And I really think about Pittsburgh every time I'm sitting in traffic. But anyway, this is called We Are the Daughters of the Witches You Never Noticed. Okay. The way he told it, heaven itself tilted slightly, just enough to spill forth this majestic creature onto the parking lot behind the Burrito Loco Taqueria and Grill. Its hooves touched down lightly upon the asphalt. Time crystallized and swirled through its antlers as it stepped toward the nearby housing development. Over the week, she noticed in her husband's descriptions the reverence explorers held for New World fauna, frosted in a layer of myth. Strong gait, those perfect velvet muscles, he'd say. And yes, she could picture this timeless creature poised and striding through the parking lot, ignoring the owner's rusted Harley, ignoring the pink LEDs advertising the specials, ignoring her husband, who just tossed a stack of scratch-offs onto the dashboard of his pickup. Then the heavenly buck turned and looked at him, quote, right through the windshield, its blacker than black eyes pinning him in time and space. To a degree, she understood. There was something about the antlers, the measured and composed ways bucks carry them. In the right circumstances, an encounter like that can feel like a visitation, like the universe filling a void you'd forgotten with the exact beauty you'd missed. Here you were, filling a U-shaped hole in the natural order of things. 14 points, he said, like the antler's existence physically pained him. The goddamn rack on that thing, just walking like it was nothing. Like the highway was a pitted black river and the strip mall a strange wash of scents. My God, 72 hours before opening day, he said, making an exasperated gesture toward the heavens. His shift in tone didn't break the spell, but how strange to hear that locker room desire wailing from an adult mouth. By this point, it didn't matter if she was listening. His story always ended the same. I swear I was so close, if only I'd had my rifle. Over and over, he told the story, as if reminding himself it wasn't a dream. She didn't correct or comment, though occasionally she thought about saying, it was a deer. They are native to this commonwealth. You have, in fact, seen them before. But again, to some degree, she understood. In the story of her own visitation, she was a young girl on the edge of puberty. Most of her memories from then seemed to involve cars. But on a trip back from a county fair north of the city, she spotted a white deer by the road. Her dad was driving uncharacteristically slow, maybe following someone he couldn't pass. There wasn't enough time to grab a camera, and besides, she was out of film. The Ferris wheel had been particularly photogenic. For a second, the white deer was framed perfectly in her passenger window. It stood placid beyond the guardrail, fur practically glowing against the burdock and stilt grass. There must have been some sound only it could hear, because it spooked, front legs stiffening as it crouched. The spell ended, and she twisted in her seat, filled with so much wonder it seemed to extend beyond her body. But the window only yielded asphalt and a rusting yield sign. Another thing, the albino buck was so close she could see its mouth. Its pink gums were mottled in a way she found vaguely repulsive, the color of them. It was young. Tiny points of antlers emerged from bulbous pink nubs that looked vaguely inflamed. Back in the present, her husband's truck rumbled down the driveway. Then faint birdsong filled the silence in its wake. On the counter sat the lunch she'd packed for him. She reached for her phone, but set it down halfway through the text. The white deer was crossing her mind again. And when she dwelled too long on its face instead of its countenance, she had to remind herself the nubs weren't the point. And why remember that part at all? The point had something to do with how young they were, her clutching that purple 110 camera in case the deer somehow reappeared. This was before marriage, children, before high school and the threat of early grandchildren. And now their kids were nearly graduated from college. That white deer hadn't lived long, probably hadn't survived the season. That afternoon, as she slid a bolt of flannel in a Snickers bar onto the counter at Joanne Fabrics, she thought, there aren't mirrors in nature, and deers wouldn't recognize themselves anyway. Also, they can't see color, meaning that albino buck lived and died without a thought to its own ethereal rarity or the danger that followed. Sometimes memories feel grafted, especially unbidden ones. She had been younger than her daughters were now when she'd seen that deer. It might as well have been a wild shadow, a melancholy tone from a dream that echoed into waking life. And that echo had been growing louder. Maybe she was more sensitive to the wilderness on the eve of hunting season, but there was a new urgency as birds scattered from trees and possums turned from the road. Past the tree line and into the forest, the fog swirled apart. It was a sign to begin early. With a new sense of purpose, she swung her shopping bags on the walk up the flagstones to their house. Her husband's truck was, of course, parked behind the Mexican restaurant. At that moment, he was probably holding a thermos of coffee between his legs, a pair of binoculars pressed to his face. This year, like always, doubt tugged at her. To some, she was about to commit a primal transgression, a crime that preceded the word itself. Alone at home, she pictured girlfriends who prayed with shaking hands for a kill, knowing what it meant if their boyfriends came home empty-handed. She considered DUIs and accidents, all the wives who would soon nurse husbands fallen out of tree stands, regardless. Across the nation, freezers would yawn empty, women just like her picking through freezer-burned bags at the bottom, wondering how far they'd stretch. As the future recedes into the present, she checks over the list, reciting the steps out loud. There's a worn-in comfort to the ritual, the words and intentions smoothing her reservations. She leans into the fridge and knots each bag before closing the door with a mighty hip. After gathering the ingredients from the counter, she sets her resolve and heads somewhere I cannot follow. Maybe a new door appears in the kitchen, one leading to a verdant place where no one goes hungry. There are no stray animals and nothing dies. She paints a sentence on this new door, then another until it opens, and she heaves her shoulder against it. If I were a hunter, I'd press her for specifics. Is the chanting in Celtic? Cherokee? Where do the glowing runes appear? Women have explained it to me, but they talk like I already knew. I stopped following up. It's more a portal than a door, someone said, and someone else said they were both metaphors. You have heard of magic before, my girlfriend asked. The internet shouted everything and nothing at me. Maybe it's that tapping sound a crockpot lid makes, or a kitchen table stacked high with ancient Tupperwares, packed with lemon slices that glow like antique candy. Root vegetables soak in a bucket, soaking the kitchen with a damp, earthy smell as the woman sings, accompanied by a voice that might be her grandmother's, but might be much older. Bones churn in a pot on the stove, and she swears she can hear them vibrating, the bones of every beloved pet buried under the garden. Maybe what the woman does in her kitchen is as simple as prayer, something gentle that sways her curtains, then ripples outward, persistent as the color green. Whether it's this or something else, the wild turns its ear toward her, toward a chorus of women, in the way animals hear with their whole bodies before following their instincts and springing away. Tomorrow, her husband will rumble up the driveway and trudge through the door, musky with campfire smoke. Ditto with a couple who lives down the street and a little cousin toting a brand new rifle with a pink camo stock. "Can't believe it," her husband will say, shaking his head. The deer that had sauntered past his trail cams, the deer that bolted onto the freeway, great herds passing through orchards and suburban tracks. They'd all fled in some mass migration or slipped into glittering pockets of time space. Even the scattered pieces beside the highway seemed gone. Having cleaned and stored her supplies for next year, somehow both diminished and restored, she'll make a sympathetic sound toward her husband and agree. "Yes," she'll say. "How strange. It's like they knew."
Oh my God.